Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called How to Make $1 Million in 100 Days Just by Selling Fruit from the Side of the Road. When most people think about fruit stands, they picture farming families selling extra products to make about $100 a day, tops. And that's a pretty accurate picture. But in this audio, you're going to meet a businessman who's figured out a way to make $1,000 a day at his fruit stands during peak season. And by running 10 of these stands a summer, he nets about $1 million for 100 days of work, and then takes the rest of the year off. And you can too, no matter what business you're in. The principles of business management, expansion, and upselling that you'll hear in this audio can be applied anywhere to turn even the smallest, most insignificant business into a fortune. You'll also hear how to find the perfect money-making location in places you'll definitely want to avoid, tips and tricks you need to know in order to get customers and keep them coming, how to get your customers not to care about price, ways to set higher and higher goals for yourself and never lose sight of the bigger picture, the one fruit you'll need to sell in order to make $1,000 a day at your stands and where to get it, the exact signs you should have at your fruit stand in order to be successful, and how many you'll need and exactly where to put them, and much, much more. The best part about the fruit stand business model is that you don't need to know a thing about farming. You won't need to grow any products, and you'll only need about a $300 investment. This simple business model demonstrates exactly how textbook principles can be applied to any business for $1 million results, even fruit stands. Now let's get going.
Let's start the story. Can we start at the beginning?
Yeah, tell me from the very beginning, how did it all start?
Well, you know, you've stopped at those roadside fruit stands.
Absolutely. It's kind of like a nostalgic thing. You know, as a kid, you can remember, like, if you go on vacations with your family and you stop at the stand, it's always kind of exciting.
Whenever somebody walks up to the stands, they're never unhappy.
Yeah.
They only say one or two things when they come up. Are they really sweet, or how much are your cherries? Those are the only two things they ever say, and it's beautiful. They have a big smile on their face when they say it, and I always hand them a cherry and say, first one's always free. And they smile, and we're talking. Let's start at the beginning so I can share with you how I've crafted and what I say and why I say it.
All right, let's do it. Start from the beginning.
So as a kid, you know, I worked on that fruit stand on the side of the road. Great-grandpa built it, and it was Grandpa.
Where were you? What state?
Small town in Central California. Farm town. You know, that whole valley from Bakersfield to past Sacramento is all just farms and fields. And so there's little patches like that I know all over the country, but there's a lot of fruit grown in the California Valley.
Were your parents farmers?
Well, their parents were farmers, and they took over. We pass it down from Grandpa to his son, and it keeps going.
So how many generations back has your family been farming?
Every picture that we have, even those old 1800 pictures, they're all black and white, but they're all farming.
Were y'all farming fruit and vegetables, all kinds of stuff?
All kinds of stuff. It was nuts, it was fruits, it was vegetables, and that's how it is when you're a farmer. You start with a few trees of what you want, and then over the years you build, and then your son takes over and he starts something. He likes to grow that, and so that's how it is. Every farm's got a bunch of stuff.
So as a kid, what do you remember about the farm?
I remember picking and knocking. That's where you took a big mallet. We didn't have fancy machinery in those days. Knocking things off the trees with mallets like nuts and picking our peaches or our cherries. It was the greatest life as an 8, 10, 12-year-old to get paid to go run through the fields and fill buckets with fruit and then come back, and we didn't get paid much, but it was a great way to live your life as a kid. But I got to finally be on the stand at my own, you know. That was when it was really fun.
So the main money, like in farming for you guys or for your family, was you're farming and then you take your bounty and you're selling it in bulk to the packers.
And the packers are taking it and packaging it and sorting it and shipping it out to different areas. And most of the time, no matter what city in America you live in, you can get our fruit. All you got to do is call the broker. Every city's got one. If there's a restaurant in the city, there's likely a fruit and vegetable broker. Look in the yellow pages.
That's farm fresh stuff.
Well, that stuff that's gone to the packing house the same day it was picked, and 2 days later it's in that broker's cooler. And so when you pick it up, you're not going to really know any difference than if you got it off the farm. That's just the same thing you buy at Albertsons and Safeway.
Okay, evolution of the fruit stand. So there's only so much money selling to the broker. So was the fruit stand an additional way for the farmer to make some money for himself?
Real money, because he's not now selling them for 50, 75 cents a pound. These are current numbers. For his product to the packer, he's able to now put it out there on the street and get $2 for that pound of cherries instead of 70 cents.
And that means a lot.
Well, it only means $100 a day. I mean, that's all the little wooden stands on the side of the road ever bring in, or 100, or if it's right in the middle of the season, you got a lot of stuff, you're maybe bringing in $200 a day. They're all the same.
Okay, so as a kid, you remember knocking the fruit down, growing up on the farm, working in the field, and just living that farm life, right?
Yeah, that was my whole life. Well, when I turned 19, Grandpa threw me the keys to the truck, and he said, there's a tent and cherries in the back of the truck. Time for you to go out on your own and do it. And it was the end of the season, and I didn't do very good. I only went 5 miles to the corner grocery store. We had a little gas station there.
Did Grandpa give you any training or tell you how to do it?
No. I've been on the fruit stand there for several years.
What kind of money did Gramps make on the fruit stand?
He made about $100 a day.
With selling cherries?
Well, everything that he had. It would be cherries and peaches and tomatoes and whatever we could grab off of the farm.
All right, now, you're not going to tell me how, but knowing what you know now, if you could go back in time, knowing what you know now after all your experience, could you have shown Grandpa how to make more money?
I could have, yes.
Now, what could that have meant for him?
Maybe 200 to 300%.
Okay, so tell me about that first day you went out. Tell me, what equipment did you have that first day you remember, I'm sure, selling?
I had a piece of cardboard that I wrote cherries on for my sign. I had a 4x8 piece of plywood that I flipped over upside down on top of the cases to make a table out of.
Okay, but Grandpa, that's what he used, right?
No, he had an actual shed that Great-Grandpa built on the edge of the property.
So he would go out with the truck and the produce and set up where the shed was?
He would go out, load up his truck with what wasn't taken by the packing plant that morning, bring it over to the shed, dump with Grandma, my mom, my sister. Everybody would work there at the shed selling the fruit. Actually, we'd spend the morning just kind of sorting it. This is bad, throw it out. This is good, put it in.
So do you remember what you sold on that first day?
Like $60.
And so did you have to give it all to him, or did you get to keep it?
That was mine.
That was yours?
Yeah.
If you didn't bring it out to the fruit stand, what would have happened to it?
It would have probably got sold over the next couple of days.
Did you learn anything that first day selling fruit?
To get the hell out of town. You're not going to make any money in this farm town. Every 2 miles, there's a stand, and everybody's selling them for the same price. If they want cherries, why are they going to stop here at the gas station and get them?
So you had too much competition.
Competition. So my first lesson in the big business world was find my marketplace.
So it didn't take you long to figure out to get a new market, right?
Well, it took me a while, yeah. It took me a couple of years. I didn't understand what the right marketplace was.
So what are some other frustrations over the couple of years that you experienced selling fruit from the side of the road?
Well, I stayed in the valley was my big problem. I went to Modesto, and then I went over to Tracy, and I went out to Stockton, and I tried these cities that were too much part of the valley. I had to figure it out that I need to get out of the valley, find the long highway stretch where there's not a store or a farm for 10 or 20 miles, and people get hungry and want to stretch their legs and pull over to fruit stand on a drive like that. Found that if I drove it 45 or 50 miles over this big barrier called the Altamont Pass and just crossed into that Bay Area, even if it's the East Bay Area, I'm getting $4 for my $2 one-pound basket of cherries.
Okay, so is it kind of like with real estate, location, location, location?
I'm figuring it out as I go along. Yeah, it's location.
So when you found the right location, why were people stopping?
Many reasons. I mean, some people just pulled over to say, I haven't seen you here before. What made you just set up a tent here on the side of the road? And then most people would come up and say, you know, can I try one of these cherries? And once they bit one, they were mine.
I got you. Okay. Let's continue. So those first years on the farm, working Grandpa's fruit stand, and then you decide to get out of town. And tell me when you really started making things work for yourself.
I got over into the Bay Area, and my volume increased. Now, instead of pulling over 20 or 25 people, sometimes 30 or 35 people, I was now pulling over 60 or 65, sometimes 70 people a day, just because of location.
Okay, so you found a couple secret locations that were really working.
And it wasn't just that. I have had literally hundreds of fruit stands in dozens of cities, and I've worked everywhere from San Diego all the way to Seattle. I've worked hundreds of fruit stands, and I've worked dozens of cities, so I have a pretty good idea over time what's going to work and what isn't. At that time, I was still experimenting. I would just keep trying new things, the highway, the neighborhood, the rich neighborhood, the poor neighborhood, the high traffic, the business area. Right in the middle of Santa Clara, I tried everywhere, the places where you couldn't believe someone would have the gall to just set their tent up there.
Tell me some areas that were just flat-out losers. If you were going to show me how to go make a couple hundred bucks today, if I'm going to say, where should I not set up?
You should not set up anywhere where there's farms. Nowhere around the farms. Where all the farms are, you need to get away from there. All those people know all those farms. They're not going to stop for you. Promise. You need to get where there aren't a bunch of cherry stands available, which means into town. You need to get into the big city. If you live in the farmland, you need to get into the city. If you live in the city, you're right where you need to be.
Someone's going to say, well, if I'm in the city, why is someone going to stop at a fruit stand when they can just go into Vons or any grocery store and pick up fruit there? What is it that gets people to stop at a roadside fruit stand that's kind of cool? What do you think it is? Is it just that nostalgic thing, or people are stopping because they know that a fruit stand is going to be better quality fruit and it's going to taste like it's fresh picked right from the farm compared to the mushy stuff in Vons?
I'll say 40% to your second example and 10% to your first. But I hate to just tell you that this is the reason why, because there's so many variances with people.
My wife brings fruit home from the store all the time, and the peaches and the plums, they're just awful.
They're junk. And here's the secret. I mean, there's all kinds of secrets, but one of my favorite secrets is to bring one thing every day, one thing that I didn't get from the broker. I don't care if I got to go to my neighbors. I'm going to go knock on farmers' doors that look like they have fresh peaches or fresh tomatoes or fresh something. Why? I want that one sign out there, that one sign that works like gold. What is it? Picked today. Better yet, today's pick.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
It only has to be a 2-foot by 1-foot sign. It doesn't have to have anything else on it. You can have a sign over here that says sweet cherries, and a sign over here that says peaches, and a sign over here that says tomatoes or nectarines. But that one little sign over there on the edge of your stand that says today's pick, or pick today.
Well, that is it. That instantly telegraphs freshness. You could see the hand picking it off the tree and putting it in the basket. It's like you've picked it yourself.
It's gold. And even if you only have one thing out of everything on your table that's picked today, they'll remember that. And even if you only did that for 2 weeks, for the other 90 days of the season, they're going to remember that's the fresh guy right there. That's the guy that has the today's pick stuff. And every time somebody comes up, and it's part of the spiel. The person at the stand's going to say, this is this, this is this, and it's part of the spiel.
So working on the farm and seeing all the signs in the farm, did you ever see those signs that said you didn't?
No. All you ever saw, and the same thing you see today, drive through the farmland and all you see is cherries. Drive a little while, next farm, peaches. That's it. And I did all those signs, but I learned through time, signs are key. That's the difference between pulling over 60, 70 and how I got it over 100. And some spots pull over 130, 140 cars a day. For every car you pull over, that was like my business thing. That was the first thing I worked on, Michael. I wanted to concentrate on, you know, I don't know much about nothing, but I do know that 30 to 40 stops is not going to make me any money. I got to aim for 100. And once I hit 100, I wasn't satisfied. I said, I'm looking for more. What can I do better? So it was all about the signs. My first analogy was, how am I going to get people into my business? And that's the sign.
How'd you figure that out?
I stripped it down. I tried the hand job, like a withdraw cherries. I did the stenciled letters.
That said what?
That said cherries.
Cherries.
I realized that out of every sign, I tried maybe 150 signs, combinations of words, multiple fruits on the same sign, all kinds of sign combinations. And the one sign that worked was sweet cherries.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. Oh, so sweet cherries was another sign.
That was the sign that turned it over 100. 100 pullovers a day were no longer my goal. Now it was 125 a day. That sweet cherry sign just totally exploded my business.
Was that being used in combination with Pick Today?
No, I hadn't figured that out yet.
So Sweet Carrie's was first.
That was first. That's when they would come up, and that was the first thing they'd say is, either how much are your cherries? And I learned that cherries was the key. I got 20 to 30 pullovers whenever I put any other word out there.
Cherries is what pulls them over.
That was the key, Michael. I could tell somebody that more than anything. If you're going to run a fruit stand, I don't care what else you sell. Just make sure you sell one thing.
In your fruit stand, are you only selling cherries?
No.
Okay, but you're selling the appointment. You're selling them to pull over and stop.
15 years ago, I'm still trying to figure out what's going on. 15 years ago, I figured it out. It's cherries. 10 years ago, I figured it out. It's sweet cherries. A couple years later, I figured out I need to increase my average sale from $7 to $15. How am I going to do that? And that's by offering more inventory.
But would you always get them in with the cherries?
Always. It's golden. I mean, there's no other fruit word out there that's going to pull them over like that one.
Sweet cherries.
And that's the golden little add to the word cherries, as I found somewhere along that little adventure of my business growing, is that word. And that word on top of cherries.
So was your sign with the word side by side?
Stencil, 10-inch letters.
10-inch letters? What color?
I like the dark red, just like a cherry. Real, real dark on a white or kind of a yellowish-white background.
Okay, now tell me about Pick Today. How did that sign come into play, and how would you use it with the sweet cherries?
Well, I've advanced it since then, but back in that day, I just made one little sign that said, Today's Pick, and it was small. It was only maybe 12 inches by 6 inches, and I leaned it up against that big 2-foot by 4-foot sweet cherry sign, so they understood that the cherries are today's pick. Oh, today's pick. And I'm telling you, I might only have today's pick for a week or two, but once that sign goes down, it doesn't matter. Everybody remembers that cherry sign, sweet cherries, is still there, but the today's pick just didn't get put up today.
Okay, so sometimes you run your stand, but it may not be today's pick.
Of course, you're going to the broker. You're no longer getting local fruit. See, the fruit ripens in Bakersfield in April, and then in Stockton area in May, and then in Sacramento area in June, and then up around Redding, Shasta, or that area up in July, and then Oregon and Washington are in August, and then Canada's cherries come in September. The cherry, it's the last fruit that blossoms, but it's the first fruit that's ready. And it works in a hemispheric rotation. I mean, as the summer moves, the fields across the states ripen in the northern direction. I like to go right to the farmer. You can go right to the farmer. I can buy my cherries for 70, 65 cents a pound.
And when you go to the farmer, are they already ready to put on the truck?
They're field run, which means everything on the tree has been picked. And although 60% of those cherries are perfect, 10% are way too pink, and 5% are way too dark, and the rest of them are somewhere in between. No cherry tree has every cherry perfect on it and ready to go at the same time.
So that's going to be your job over in the fruit stand, is to separate them?
It is the person who's standing under the tent, taking the cherries out of the farmer's cases and putting them into the baskets. That's their job, is to sort that basket as the tree gave it to them. In other words, you don't give them every cherry in that basket perfect and throw away everything else. No, 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 no. You give them 50% perfect cherries or 60% perfect cherries, just like the tree gives. 10% is going to be a little too dark. 5% is going to be a little too green. And the rest is going to be somewhere in between.
So you give it to them like the tree gives it to you.
Exactly. But when you market it, if you're going to give somebody a handful of cherries, do you want them to see the pretty side or the not-so-pretty side? The girl puts them into the basket with her gloves on. I've still, to this day, never seen a fruit stand, besides one of mine, with the girls wear gloves. She reaches in, she sorts that basket so it looks attractive, sets it up in a nice teepee fashion, and sticks it out on the table. So let's stop there for a second. My next lesson was packaging. I said, well, you know, every farm has a damn scale, and every farm wants to sell them by the pound, and, you know, I don't want to carry a scale, and I sure don't want to get stuck into a spot where people are making their own baskets, and it's a mess. You know what? I'm just going to make baskets. Yeah, it's about a pound, I don't know, but depending on how much is in it, those little green baskets, $4. $5 if you're in the peninsula or San Francisco.
You'll sell one of those baskets for $4 or $5?
And it probably cost me 50 cents.
That's pretty good.
Well, I just begun. So now we're on our way. So we got ourselves 120, 130 pullovers a day. We're moving somewhere between 400 and 500 pounds of cherries. It's major profit. And you're filling in the little stuff.
All right, so hold on. Let's say you got 100 pullovers, and if you sell each one of them a basket at $4, that you make about $3.30?
Well, it was a pound, but unfortunately, 30 years doing what I do, and I still have never weighed a basket.
I mean, do you think it's a pound?
No.
Not even quite.
I think it's somewhere between 0.75 and 0.85.
All right, so on a $4 basket, you're going to keep around $3.50 profit.
Correct.
That's $350. When someone pulls over and they're buying cherries, what do you see the average unit of sale about?
Well, next lesson. I really needed a spill. I felt like just standing there, I wasn't getting the production.
You need to increase sales.
To increase sales. So what I did is I said, let's put some more fruit out here. How about if I put some peaches right here, and I'm only going to double my money on these peaches, and I'm only going to double my money on these tomatoes, and I'm only going to double my money on these other items, but I'm going to fill in some of these holes and bring my average up. I don't like the $7 or $7.50 average on those 100 customers. Mm-hmm. I need to bring that up to a $14, a $15 average. Average on these 100 customers so I can make the money I want to make. So when they come up, the first thing they do is they get a cherry. Before they have a chance to get any information about why I'm here, anything, won't even talk to you. You got to try a piece of fruit.
All right, I want to break it down. They're driving on the side of the road. If it's a fresh pick, they're going to see sweet cherries, today's pick. If it's today's pick. They're going to pull over. They're going to get out of their car. You're standing there working or just standing there and there's no one there. They're walking to you. Do you say anything to them or do you wait for them to approach you?
Totally ignore them because part of the program is, you know, the Latino guy sitting on the corner on 3 cases of cherries all day and only sold a half a case? Because he's sitting on his cases of cherries. He's bored and he looks bored. I'm busy and I look busy. I decorate my table a certain way. I have empty baskets on my table on purpose. I have full baskets all over the table, but I got to have some empty ones because it looks like you just left and they cleared out half my table. And I'm not looking up at you because you're going to walk up to me and the first thing you're going to say if you don't have a warm feeling is, how much are your cherries? And if you do have a warm feeling, you're going to say, how sweet are they?
You don't have your prices displayed on the table.
Never.
Do other roadside stands put their prices there?
Sometimes.
Is it a mistake?
If you let me give you the spiel, I want you to walk up to me and let me sell you.
Okay, so I'm going to come up and I'm going to say, how much are they?
Our cherries. First one's always free. And grab it from me, please. Take it, bite. Great. And I have 3 sizes. I have a small, medium, and large. Over here, the cherries are 4, 8, and 12. Here, peaches are 3, 6, and 9. Here, tomatoes, 2, 4, and 6. And here, the nuts are 1, 2, and 3. What just happened to you?
I got confused.
You're lost. What do you care about the price? All you want is one of those you're going to point, because I'm going to tell you. Just point to the basket you like.
Do you want to confuse them on purpose?
Yes.
Okay, why?
Because I don't want them calculating. That's $4 for that little one-pound basket of cherries. I could go down right now for $2.99 and get them at Albertsons. They're on sale, usually $5.99. They're on sale this week for $2.99 at Albertsons.
All right, so I want you to repeat that again. Okay, so I'm going to say, how much are they? Do it again.
First one's always free. Try that.
Do you grab one then right there? And
I've already got one between my fingers as I'm packing this basket. I'm preparing up my next basket. And I've already got a sample between my fingers or here in the corner where I know it is. And I can see you out of the corner of my eye, although I'm facing down towards my table. You're walking right up towards me. It's a beautiful sunny day. You're excited to see this fruit stand that suddenly popped up. You come up and you say, hey, how much are your cherries? I'm going to say, first one's always free. You're going to feel warm. You're going to bite that. And you're going to say, this is one delicious cherry.
What kind of gloves do you have on?
I have those food ones. What do they call them? I think they're latex.
And so you extend your arm.
Extend the hand with the cherry in it.
Do you look him in the eye?
Rarely. I'm too busy. I'll explain this as we go along, because there's nothing funner than having you walk up. While one's walking away with 3 bags, 2 more are standing here trying to pay me on my right, and 1 over here on the left that you're trying to squeeze in between who's just asked the same question and finishing off their second sample. Because while you're biting that cherry and I'm doing... Well, we have small, medium, and large. The cherries are 4, 8, and 12. 3, 6, and 9 over here on the peaches. 2, 4, and 6 over here on the nectarines. 1, 2, and 3 on the tomatoes, whatever it is. All I'm doing is making it so I can have them say, well, give me a small of that, a medium of that, and a large of that. That's what I want.
Yeah, you've totally confused them. There's no way they can remember. And because they don't remember the price, you got them.
All they want is a medium cherry, or if they love their sample, they want a large, or if they hated it, they want a small. But I'm not done. Before before they can tell me, and they probably already told me, I'll take a large. They'll say, how many pounds are in that one? I'll say, I don't know, probably about four. Four for 12 is about $3 a pound. That's your better deal. If you go with the medium, it's about 2.5 pounds, and that's eight. So you're paying maybe like $3, $3.25. And then if you want to get a small, that one's $4. Those are around a pound. So while you're deciphering that, if you really wanted to know more, that rarely does it happen. About 80% go right along with the program. But you're digesting this 3692461234812 thing I threw at you. I've sliced you off a very thin slice of a delicious peach, and I've handed that to you, and you're biting into that before you even say, okay, I'm going to take one of those, too. I've already got my hand on another sample. I don't know what it is yet. It could be a nectarine or an apricot, whatever I got my hands on that morning from the broker. Whatever he had cheap that I could get that looked good and tasted good and was show good. I grabbed a couple cases of those, and I've got a slice of that in your hand. Really thin. Not the big chunk. I learned a long time ago. Oh, I got satisfied on that. No. Nice and thin.
Tell me the lesson. How did you learn that?
Just too many sales flipping by. Wow, this is a delicious peach.
Because the other stands would cut it up, and I've seen it. You go to the stand, you can go have all your fruit for lunch there, right?
Right.
They put it out.
Right.
And that's a mistake.
A big mistake.
You got to control it.
And then they're dying for more. When I say thin as I can slice a peach, I'm going to hand it to them. When it lays on their tongue and they taste that sweetness, give me a small peach too, okay?
Oh, that's genius.
I don't know. It's just practice and error, and I know nothing about big business, but it just seemed logical. So as we go along, 2, 4, 6, 1, 2, 3, slice, sample. Now, the next thing that's going to happen is you're going to tell me what you want. You're going to point. Just point to what you like. That's what I like to say. Well, I'll take that one. Next thing I'm going to do is before I give them their fruit or let them touch their fruit, I want their money in the basket.
Okay, in the basket.
Well, I don't take their money by hand because I'm touching food. And this impressed them so much when I figured this out. People just loved it. You know the baskets I'm talking about? They're cardboard. They're 3-4 times the size of the little green plastic ones, and they hold fruit. They're cardboard. Every fruit stand's got them. They'll hold like 3 pounds or 4 pounds in some sizes.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. They come up about 4 inches.
About 3 inches, you're right. Maybe four, but that's the basket that is the large and the medium. The small ones are the little plastic ones. So I've got different sizes of baskets. Well, those two large cardboard baskets are my bank. I put one on top of the other with a blank on top of that. In that blank is a few cherries just so I can recognize that little stack of three baskets right there is my bank. So I'm going to grab my bank with my right hand, lean it over to them, lift off the top three sample cherries that are in that top empty one, and under there is going to be a bunch of ones and fives, and if I lift that one up, it's going to be all 20s. So he's going to probably, or she's going to probably, because probably 60% of the pullovers are middle-aged women, probably more women than men, almost any spot I've ever had, except maybe the big highways where the truck drivers are. So she's going to probably pull that 20 out of her pocket, and she's going to drop it in there. She's going to look confused, like, aren't you afraid someone's going to grab all that money? Never has happened. I've been working the basket bank for 15 years, never had anyone try to make a move. And I'll purposely turn my head, still watching out of the corner of my eye. They never do. No one tries to steal. So she drops her 20, looking confused because she's thinking she has some change coming. I drop basket 2 on top of the bottom basket. Now she sees a bunch of 1s and 5s, and I say, well, you got a medium peach. That was 6. You got a large cherry. That was 12. 6 and 12 is 18. Take 2 singles out of there. Great. Drop the empty basket with the 3 cherries on top. Now they're all one little compartment again. Set them off to my side, and I'm now grabbing her bags because I don't want her to take my cardboard baskets. I want her to have a plastic food bag that I've gone and bought a case of before the day started or once a week. There's a plastic bag that the cherries have been fed into that's been lining that cardboard basket. I can grab the 2 handles of that plastic bag, lift up, and all of her cherries are ready to go.
Does she think she's going to get the basket?
Her first time there, she might suspect, but she doesn't see the basket. It's covered up by the plastic bag.
I gotcha.
That's the one thing I always have a problem whenever I'm training somebody new on a stand. I have to tell them, you know, nobody gets these baskets. They cost $1 apiece. So, okay, let's continue. So she's going to take her 2 singles change, and I'm going to set my bank to the side. I'm now going to reach up under the table, grab her 2 bags, the large cherry, the medium peach, hand them to her. to rush her off. It's kind of a funny thing, and I still don't understand it after 30 years. But for some reason, and it could be safety, it could be, hey, somebody knows there's good fruit there. I don't know why exactly, because everybody's a little different. But when there's somebody pulled over at my stand, I guarantee you, one or two people are pulling over before they leave. It's just funny how it works. When somebody's pulled over and another car is coming along and they see them pulled over, hey, they're open. Hey, they must be good. Hey, it must be a safe place. I don't know. But when you can slow them down a little, at least until the next car pulls up, and that's my timing. That's all about your timing and how you can slow them down. And I like to tell a little story, a little joke, talk rude. I don't know, explain something. And generally, when you're talking to these people, they love to talk about their garden, how when they were a kid and they went to the pick-your-own, you-pick farm. So I could write a book of all the great fruit stories that people told me.
But you want to keep them there because when there's a car there, it's going to increase your chances to get another pullover.
And, you know, the girls aren't really good at that. Not everybody needs to do that. I just found that that makes a difference. You don't need to do that to make $1,000 a day. But if you can, don't be surprised if your average goes up to $1,250.
Can we talk about the money? And you've been doing this 30 years. If someone's properly trained, if they have the right location, and if they do everything you train them to do, what kind of money can they make?
$1,000 every day that they start with $300 in the morning.
So they start with $300 in the morning, they make $1,000, they'll gross $700 a day?
No. They'll gross $1,300 and they'll net $1,000.
So they'll net $1,000.
Correct.
So the $300 in the morning, is that for their fruit?
You need fruit.
And this is one stand, right?
One stand.
One stand for a day. Look, I'm your brother. I've got a three-day notice on my door. I have a truck, and I'm healthy, and I've got a strong back, and I need to get my rent paid by Friday. What are you going to tell me to do? I'm right here in San Diego.
If you're my brother, you're going to be a millionaire in 100 days.
A millionaire?
You're going to make $1 million in 100 days cash.
I'm going to be a millionaire in 100 days.
Correct.
Man, I like that. How are you going to get me started?
I'm going to start you on day one with $200.
What time do I have to wake up in the morning?
That's the thing. If you want to be a millionaire and you're my brother, you need three things. One, an entrepreneurial spirit. If you want to make a few hundred dollars a day, you can get up at whatever time you want and you can have whatever kind of spirit you want. But if you want to make $1 million in 100 days, you got to have a real entrepreneurial spirit, too. Lazy time is over. You can't get up at 10 o'clock. You can't shut the stand down at 4. If you want to work for 100 days, I'll make you a millionaire. If you're my brother and you're willing to do that, we're going that route. Three, the last thing, you need supplies. What are my supplies? The first day, you need $200 to go to the fruit broker with. You need a tent, and you need a van or a truck to transport your things.
Like a 10-by-10 tent?
Exactly. Here's my advice, because you're my brother. Don't start with the $69 tent that Grandpa gave me. Don't start with that thing that has four pieces for each leg, takes you a half an hour, and blows over. Spend $199. Get the best tent you can and make it last you 5 years.
Okay, I need the tent, and where am I going to put everything?
You're going to slip your two tables in the side of your truck, standing up sideways, your tent next to them, and you're going to stack your fruit next to those. You're going to have one 30-gallon tub with a lid that you keep all your supplies, your gloves, your stakes and ropes for your tent, your bags, your baskets, your hammer. All your little supplies are going to be in that one tub. That's all you need. You're done.
And my signs?
Oh, yeah, and your signs, of course.
How many signs am I going to need?
Well, that's one of the things. I've done crazy stuff with signs. Michael, you're going to love it. I've done 10 signs in each direction within a mile of my stand. I've done crazy stuff that made people sick, I think, because they just wouldn't stop.
That's cool. Tell me about that 10-sign one in each direction. What were they made out of?
They're all made out of the same thing. They're all made out of plywood that I cut up into little sections, and I'll spend the whole month of April working on signs. Even though they're the same signs I had last year, I'm not happy. When you pull up to my stand, everything is clean. There's no crap on the ground. No girl's backpack is there. It's in the tub. There's nothing laying around. I don't do the hay bales anymore. I don't do any weird stuff where I've tried everything in the world. Tent, two tables, a little tub that's got supplies in it, and stacks of fruit.
You're like the farmer who just came off the field and set up his little tent, and here's the fruit.
Here it is.
Okay, tell me your 10 signs, your 10 ones going in each direction. Did they all say the same thing, or did you change the words?
I used to change signs once a week. I spent so much time.
So you'd have to put the signs out daily, right?
Daily, and then take them down at the end of the day. Rarely do I have spots that I can just leave them up for the whole summer.
How do you put 10 signs? Do you have a stake on it, like a real estate sign?
No, you just get a rock, and you roll it over there and lean it against the tree, and then you set it up at the bottom of the sign so it doesn't fly over if the wind blows or a car goes too close to it. And you walk another 30 feet, you put another sign down and you find some way to pry it up so it stays up. If it's the fence of the field or another tree or some rocks or some weeds, some way it's going to stand up. Walk another 30 feet, this one says nectarines. Walk another 30 feet, this one says tomatoes. I've done them all, but none of them work.
None of them worked?
None of them worked. The one that worked was cherries. The one that really worked was sweet cherries. The golden ticket, sweet cherries, today's pick.
I'm your brother. That's what you're going to tell me to start with.
Yes.
Sweet cherries, today's pick. And how many would you say I need to start?
You need one for each direction.
How many feet from the stand?
People can see your stand. People know you're there. You're not giving them any information by throwing all these signs out there. What you need to do is have one sign a quarter mile before your stand that says, sweet cherries.
And then they're looking for them.
And then walk the other direction a quarter mile and put the other one.
So I've got a good tent. I've got all my supplies that you told me about on the list. Okay, I'm in San Diego. How do I find my fruit? Where should I go?
You're going to pick up the phone book. You're going to look under three sections. First one's produce. Second one's fruit brokers. You're going to make phone calls. You got your phone book there? Let's look it up. You're going to see a whole list of them. Even if you live in small town America, if there's a restaurant, somebody's bringing vegetables and fruit into town. Find that company and you're going to ask them, hey, do you have cherries? How much are they? Will you get me cherries if you don't have them? Great. Can we do that on a daily basis? Great. And then he knows he's now making a couple bucks, whatever, I don't know, every town's going to be different. But I don't pay over a dollar a pound. I don't care if they're golden cherries. I don't pay over a dollar a pound.
Are the brokers all over the place with price?
Yeah.
Does price go up and down?
It's pretty consistent. You can't control him. It's how much he wants to make. I can't tell you what that broker wants to make versus this broker.
Well, when I'm starting, like from your experience, you'll find a couple good relationships with some fruit brokers and you'll stick with them.
Yes.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. I'm looking for a good relationship with a fruit broker who's got cherries under a dollar a pound.
And if you have to pay $1.50 a pound and you get $4 a pound, is that really going to matter to you the first season?
No.
No. So if you're 20-pound case of cherries, that's what they come in generally. The guy tells you on the phone it's $32, are you going to hang up on him?
No.
Probably might want to think about it. At least go sample them. But you're going to make money.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. You're teaching me to start with cherries, okay? It's my first day. I'm going to start with just cherries. So I'm going to go out to the food broker. Do I walk in and buy them, or do the brokers deliver? I mean, what's the best way?
You're going to his place where many other people are probably doing the same thing. You're going to his place at 5, 6 in the morning. Now you're not running 10 stands. You're going to his place at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you're going to be loaded and on the road at 8:20, 8:30.
They're waiting for me.
Yeah.
And I get to go grab what I want?
You get to go in and say, hey, what do you got in cherries? And he's going to say, come on back to the back cooler. He's going to walk you back there, or he's going to send somebody back there with you, or he's going to just send you back there because he's too busy. Go back there, and you're going to see stacks of cherries. Hopefully he's got more than one variety. He's got four or five types and prices, so you can pop the lids on these cases and then take one out and sample it. Go to the next stack.
So what type should I get?
The ones that taste the best. Forget about the varieties. These ones come before that one. It doesn't matter. You're going to sample one of each of his cases. This came from this type of a grower, and this came from this type of a packer, and this came from this type of a packer. You're going to sample each one because you could care less about anything else. But when they bite into that cherry and you're looking at them or you're slicing the slice of your next sample, you want their eyes to light up. You want it to explode on their chin. You want their cheeks to shoot up really high and their color to come to their face, and you want them to go, wow, that's a great cherry. I don't care if they're $12 a case. I don't want them if they don't taste great.
Okay, so when you're sampling them, I mean, do I need to sample maybe a couple of them just to make sure?
I guess. One's enough.
So you're good to go. You trust the rest of the batch?
The one tip, it probably took me a few times. I didn't learn that right away. You want to pop the lid on every one of those cases and make sure one of them isn't full of mold, hasn't been sitting somewhere for 2 weeks and he just slipped it into your stack. Because he doesn't really know what's going on. He probably has somebody loading them onto a cart and bringing them out to your truck for you, one of the many warehouse type of workers. Just check out your stuff before you leave.
Do that every time.
Every time. Take every case lid off. It's going to take you 30 seconds a box. Every box is going to bring you $72. That 20-pound case of cherries is going to bring you $72, whether you pay $12, $15, or $20. It's going to make you $72.
Now, what time of the year could I expect that these things have been picked today?
Well, if you're in California, you're looking to start in mid-April. If you're in Central America, you're looking to start on the 1st of May.
This is seasonal.
Correct. I work 100 days, and then I take 265 off.
Okay, so you're going to show me how to, in 100 days, make $1 million. So this is only working 100 days out of the year.
That's what I said.
Wow.
100 days, $1 million.
Okay, so the 100 days is the season.
Correct.
Okay, so about when in April are we starting?
Mid-April. You can never say this is the date. Too many factors. It's all about the weather and the heat. You can't say this is always the date. Never the same day year after year. It's always within a week or two of each other. I started many a seasons on the 15th of April. I started many a seasons on the 1st of May.
But nothing's happening in March.
Nothing's happening except you're running around getting permits.
How many months are they fresh picked where I can use that fresh pick sign?
You're going to use today's pick only the days that you can get anything on that table that was picked today.
Well, what do you think my chances are of doing that?
Every day. Cherry. The last fruit to blossom, the first fruit that's ready. Well, when they're not ready anymore, and the broker's now bringing them in not locally from California, but he's bringing them in from Oregon because it's July, or Washington because it's August, that means that your peaches are ready in California. They're picking those today. And your nectarines were ready the week before, and next week will be the tomatoes, and the week after will be melons. Just try to always get something, if you can, that was picked today.
So I can use my today's pick.
And it doesn't matter where you put it. I wouldn't put it and lean it against the sign that says cherry. I'd lean it right against my table.
So you've told me how to buy my fruit from the broker, but since I'm starting off easy with cherries, if I'm just doing cherries for the day, how many pounds of cherries do I need, do you think?
Well, you're not going to step on yourself too bad, so you want to start with a small amount until you found your spot. And once you've sold out that small amount and it's 3 o'clock, you know the next day you're going to put an extra 2 cases on. And when you sold that out and it's 4 o'clock, you're going to keep adding on each day.
Do I know my spot before I buy my cherries?
You better.
Okay, so let's talk about the spot. I'm here in San Diego. What are you going to tell me, as being your brother, I'm going to say, where the hell am I going to sell these? Where's the best place?
This is the most important and the biggest challenge you're going to have, my brother, is going to be finding your spot that's going to make you money and not going to bring you any heat. And why do I not want heat? Because I rarely get permits anymore. You want to ask me why?
Why?
Let me share you a story, and then maybe you'll understand. In Northern California, in the Bay Area, there's a kids' amusement park, Thin Vallejo. And I had a great spot there. Every year, I could close down at 5 o'clock because I already knew I had 1,000 made. And it was great. It was money. It was show up late, leave early, but I could just clobber that spot year after year. I could abuse that spot. It didn't matter. It was awesome.
And it was right by an amusement.
Right at the exit. The Marine World.
Oh, Marine World, like the Sea World.
Yeah.
Okay.
As they rolled out, my stand was right there. And I had to go and ask the guy who ran the park there, and he said, no problem. And I said, cool, and I set it up there. And I was good. I was great. They were happy. I was happy. Customers were happy. It was easy. I would grease them, you know. Once every couple of weeks, I would take a case in and drop them on that guy's desk. And then what'd that cost me? $12, $14? And that's generally the best spots. It's not the spots where the guy says, give me $100 a week. The best spots are the spots where the guy goes, yeah, I don't care. Go ahead. Just bring me some fruit once in a while.
When you approach him, what do you say? You go, hey, can I set my truck up?
It's chill, and it's beautiful, and there's a technique that works like money. But let's go there when we finish this one.
Okay.
All right, where are we?
You're telling me the story about the spot that you had.
So I'm in Vallejo, greatest spot. I just love it because it's stress-free. Well, I have, not my brother, but he's like my brother. I have a friend who's in big trouble, and he needs help, and so I give him a job. I know it's a mistake, but I'm going to give him a job. Man, is it a mistake. Don't ever hire your friends. Tip number two. Next. He won't sell there without a permit. He doesn't want to get in trouble with the police. And I try to explain to him, I've done this for so many years, you know that. I never have ever gotten one ticket. And even when the police do pull over because of some reason, they're usually there to buy cherries, or I'm still going to be there 2 days later. So, you know, you don't need a permit. But every day I would get grief, and I told him finally, here's an extra $100. Go get your permit. It was either Thursday or Friday. And I had just shut that stand down that whole weekend and let him get his permit thing worked out. He had to go down to the police station. The city permit was like $40. And then he had to go back on Monday. He had to go get something called a lifeline, I think. To get the city permit, he had to go down to the police station. Some cities have more strict standards than others. Some in and out of there in 20 minutes with the permit for less than $50. Some make you run around for a month. That's why I always start early if I'm going to get any permit. So he goes in, gets his lifeline at the police station. A couple days later, he's got his permit. We're good to go. Load up the truck. We're heading back to the spot in Vallejo. When we get there...
Someone's there.
No, it's worse. The city has posted no parking signs along the entire street that they were totally unaware of the week before I got that permit.
Wow. So you think that tipped them off?
I know it did. And that was it. So if I can tell you something, if you have to get a permit, great, get it. But if you don't have to get a permit, my lesson that I've learned, I only get a permit when I have to.
And out of all the time, you never had a permit.
Not once. A dozen cops pull over because I'm an idiot and I had to learn the hard way. What do you mean? Well, you know the white line on the side of the road? If your tent's at least 6 feet away from that, that cop's going to pull over.
Okay, so you need to be 6 feet back from the white line.
If you set your tent up on Skyline Ridge that's way steep and there's a big turnout, but when people turn out, they have to slow down and they make the whole road below them slow down to a dead stop and
yeah.
They have to start in first gear again. Do you know what happens?
Yeah, it's dangerous.
And you know what happens? It's so dangerous and people get so upset. Do you know who they call?
They call the cops.
They call 911 and tell the highway patrol there's somebody out here with his tent out on this turnout stopping traffic. And when he comes, he doesn't even get out of his car. He's so angry at me. He just gives me this, out of here, thumb, and he just drives off and spits a big dust ball at me. So what can I tell you? A, make sure your spot is safe. Make sure you're not going to cause yourself some heat. Don't get yourself in some spot where you're going to cause traffic trouble. Because as soon as you cause traffic trouble, I promise you, your spot's going away.
Okay, that's some good advice. So this is hard to find a spot. What are you going to tell me as being your brother? Where should I go? Where should I start to find my spot?
Well, finding the spot's really not hard. I mean, how many gas stations, grocery stores, supermarkets, places that you regularly do business where you could walk up and say, hey, you know, my family grows fruit, and I've told my family that maybe I could move some of it for them this summer. Do you mind if I throw a tent out here maybe during May for a few weeks? You're not going to ask them for a 100-day commitment. You're not going to ask them if you can take over, you know, the little corner of the parking lot back over there. I was just wondering, can I throw a tent up there and sell some cherries with my daughter next weekend? You just want to open up the door so they can see what they got.
Okay, but where am I going to go? Like, in front of a grocery store?
No, that's the last place.
I'm looking for a good amount of traffic?
Traffic is the key. You're looking for a spot where cars are going by not every 1 minute, but every 30 seconds. Some place where you can get the pullovers. It's rare that festival works, and that concert never works. And the boat show, it's in a circle, and they see you once, and they're not going to see you again. You're invisible.
So you don't want to use a concert or a festival?
Forget all that. You want pullovers. You want to make $1,000 cash in one day? You got to pull them over. You got to have the cars going by you. And you don't want to set it up at the grocery store or even a mile from the grocery store. My best spots are out on those open highways. Best spots are in those really nice, nice neighborhoods. The best spots are those gas stations where people are standing there for 4 to 6 minutes with their hand on the pump looking over their shoulder at you thinking, wow, they got a lot of customers coming and going over there. You know, you're on the corner of that parking lot, they're just going to put it on automatic and step over to get a free sample.
But that could be in a good residential area, right? In a gas station parking lot?
Those are money.
Because you get people coming in there all the time.
Because you've got it out there towards the edge, and if they're getting gas, they're looking at you every second that they're getting gas.
Okay, give me some more tips for spots. Gas stations, open roads where there's cars going by every 30 seconds. Don't go to spots where there's going to be one-time events like concerts or trade shows. You want the ones that are going to see you over and over again, right?
I want the cars that are going by me and not the people that are walking around in a circle. I don't want to see the same eyes twice in one day. I want them going by my tent.
When you get a spot, let's say you're in the corner of a gas station, but a lot of these people come get gas at that place over and over again. Does it help for them to see you over and over again? Or when you get a spot, can business be pretty good at first and then kind of slow down because of familiarity?
So one of my newer lessons might pertain to this. One of my newer lessons over the last 5 years has been, how do I keep them coming back? People come and buy it from you early in the season, but later the store's so full of all those fruits, and they're already there. That's part of their regular program. How do I take the regular program and eliminate their produce shopping and just bring it to me? So somewhere I just said to myself, I'm going to try stuff. I said stuff. Nothing seemed to work until I started trying. Well, can I ask you what you like? Is there anything on this table you don't see that you would really enjoy the next time you come? And then they say, well, you know, I just love apricots. Do you have any? I will have them soon. You make sure you come back to this stand in a few days because I'm going to have you some apricots.
Did you ever ask and get their names or emails?
Never. And you're going to have such control and such a connection with these people that not only could you get their name and number, but you could sell them your water system. All the guys that come up to me all the time want to leave their brochures and do I want to be involved with whatever they're selling as some kind of a manager or whatever. You know, no. Get that stuff off my table.
So you would recommend that if I can capture their name, number, email address, if possible.
Never done it. I have no idea how that would help me as just a Portuguese that sells fruit on the side of the road. You're probably better with knowing how that would help than I would.
Okay, so I've got a location. I've got my supplies. I've got my broker. What time should I be set up?
Stand at 9. Why? Because your traffic's going to start up at 10. But even when I get to a spot, there'll be people waiting. I've had sometimes 4 or 5 people waiting when I get to a spot at 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, I'm sorry, folks. I cannot help you until I get everything up, and it's going to take me 20 minutes. Well, I thought you opened at 9. No, I really opened at 9:20. Whatever time I get there, if it's 9:15 and they're waiting, I know it's going to take me 20 minutes. I opened at 9:40 today. It's my job, my boss. That's the greatest feeling in the world.
You just make them wait.
And here's the thing. Why do I have to do that? When a person buys that bag of fruit and they're handing over their money, it's not more often than not, but it's so often 30% of the people say, why don't you give us one of those small cherries too? Or, you know, we're going to go see our grandparents this afternoon. Why don't you give us another one of those larges? So why do I tell the people it's so important to keep your table full of fruit? You're going to have 3 larges of everything. You're going to have 3 mediums of everything before you say go in the morning. Why? Because you don't want that guy to come up, buy his medium cherry, and leave. You want him to buy a medium cherry. You want to hit him with some samples so maybe he'll pick up 1 or 2 more items. And you want that opportunity for him to say, well, these are sure good. You're going to have to give me another one for later. Or, you know, my neighbor just loves cherries. I'm going to take her a bag. You have to have your table full. That's a big, big mistake that fruit stands only have one little basket out at a time.
So I've got cherries on my first day. I've got my location. The gas station sounds good. I'm starting in the middle of April, so I've got my sweet cherries and I've got my sign. Today's pick. We're rocking and rolling. I'm selling. I've got your pricing pitch down, memorized. I've got the wood crates where I have my change in there. I've got my gloves on. So if I'm starting with just cherries, and then let's say I'm getting more comfortable, I've got some confidence in my own stand, now how are you going to take me to $1 million in 100 days?
All right. So you've done day one, and you're going to start day two. On day two, you're going to call home and have your girlfriend put an ad on Craigslist, work on fruit stand, paid $10 cash per hour. You're going to get about 500 phone calls before you close your stand up that day. During one of those phone calls, you're going to hear somebody sounds like it's the right person, and you're going to tell them where your stand is and that you'd like to meet them right now. Tomorrow morning when you open, you're already going to have this person trained, and you're going to be out looking for another spot, and you're going to be bringing in twice as much fruit with your profits that you made from that day, and you're going to have 2 tents going. Here's my goal. At the end of the first week, I want 4 stands. You don't have to do it on your second day.
End of the first week, 4 stands.
Correct.
Now, realistically, you got some guy from Craigslist, the trainee. Can that be frustrating, or can you get them trained pretty easily?
It's pretty easy because all they're going to do for the first half a day is stand behind you and put cherries in baskets. And you're just going to constantly be telling them more or less, cleaner or less clean. I don't want to see any junk in my basket. You're going to constantly be critiquing them until they know how to make a perfect basket. The whole 3, 6, 10 hours that he's standing there with you, he's hearing you say the same thing 100 times. The next day, he's good.
He is.
Yeah.
Do you worry about them stealing from you?
Yes. That's the greatest thing that I've ever come up with, having those baskets and the salesperson never touch the cash. I can park 3 blocks away and watch my binoculars for 4 hours. They never steal. If they never touch the money, never touch it with their own fingers. Never touch it with their own fingers. And you can keep an eye on it, you're good.
So you show them how to do that.
I show them. That's the program. Why? Because almost every customer, the first time they come to the stand, that is so great that you don't touch the money. They love that because you're touching their food. And you know what's the funnest thing? It's when you've got this person walking up to your stand while you're just finishing up with these two people as they're leaving. They're just finishing talking to you because they're telling their story. And on your left, you have two people coming up behind the person coming up. Hey, how much are your cherries? The person coming up says. You hand them a cherry. You say the first one's always free. And let me tell you, I've got some other fruit here. And you're slicing a slice for them while these other two customers come up. They're already programmed. They point. They don't ever talk to you. They just point. They point to that basket. They point to that basket. You're pulling up their bags for them. You're opening up your change jar. Meanwhile, you're still saying goodbye to these people, explaining this guy what's going on with the samples. You're hitting him with the 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, blah, 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 blah. And he's just engulfed. I can't explain the feeling that I'm gaining. It is really exciting.
So you get the ad on Craigslist. You get them to meet you. It's going to be my first day, and I've used Craigslist, and I'm sure I can get that phone ringing. When you put the ad on Craigslist, is your girlfriend handling that, or do you have the calls come into you on a cell phone or what?
I have them come to me because I make every person who works a stand shut off their phone.
So if I'm calling you about the job and you got a good feeling about me, what are the expectations? I mean, what do you say to them to do your best to keep them honest and service the stand properly?
Here's the first thing you say is, are you prepared to make $100 cash a day every day for the rest of the summer and not take the 4th of July off, Labor Day off, any day off? That's the thing about the commitment, about not being lazy, entrepreneurial spirit, what it takes. There are no days off. If you want to make it happen, you have to give all 100 days from the minute you get up until it gets dark.
Okay, because I know I've run a lot of Craigslist ads, and there's a lot of lazy-ass people there.
So they call up, and I tell them, you know, this is the deal. I'm looking for somebody to commit 100 days, and I will give them $100 cash every day that they work for me. But it has to be every day until the end of the summer. And they go, but I want to take off and go to the, I have plans. Sorry, this is probably not for you. Thanks for calling, though. And I'll go through 100 calls, but I'll have 5, 8 people standing there by the end of the day, and I'll look them over. And what am I looking for? I'm looking for someone who's not going to scare grandma when she sees the fruit stand. More important than anything, I want honesty. Second most important thing, I need someone to pull people over, not scare them off. And they don't have to be a hot little 20-year-old in shorts. Middle-aged woman's great.
Do you like women better than men?
Much better. The pullover percentage is probably 20, 25% better. People feel safer. I don't understand it, but for some reason they pull over more.
What are concerns from some of your workers?
I'll give you an example. Last year, had a new person, and actually it was a guy. I don't hire as many guys as I do girls. But I had a guy, and he came down, interviewed, watched the fruit stand for half a day. He was just all over it. He loved it. But he said he wouldn't do it without a permit. And I said, hey, that's up to you. You want to get a permit? Some people feel like that's the first year they work for me, and they go and get a permit. That's up to you, and I'll pay you for it. I'll give you every dime that you pay for that permit back in your pocket. But I'll tell you something else. A lot of times the permit's just a big runaround and you don't ever get anywhere, and some cities are just a mess, and I just don't even get permits most of the time anymore unless I'm forced to. 2 days later, he was back and ready to work. I said, well, you sure look pumped up. You got your permit? And he said, no, I just talked to some cops. And I said, what? And he said, I just talked to cops. I've been talking to cops since I saw you. And it seems like they don't want to mess with us. They don't want to touch the fruit stand. They don't even want to look at you. You're not breaking any laws. You're not selling crack. You're not doing anything bad. Unless you cause yourself some trouble, sell some crap, Don't put your tent in a safe spot and cause a traffic jam.
What the hell are they going to bother with you for?
You're out selling fruit, man. You're the only person they've seen on this street that isn't trying to screw somebody. You're out there trying to make a living doing something honest. What could be better than selling fruit, Michael?
I know. It's so wholesome and natural and innocent. That's why this topic is just so cool.
It's the greatest life. It's kind of hard to believe, but I would do it for free.
It just sounds like you have the confidence that you've done it so much. It's just like as long as you're physically able and mentally able, you'll always be able to make a wonderful living in doing something you love anywhere, as long as there's a fruit broker, right?
Correct.
How old are you now?
45.
You're 45. So how long have you been doing this?
Well, since I was 8, but how long have I been out on my own where Grandpa said, get your stuff?
Yeah, since you're 19.
30 years.
Tell me what the lifestyle is for you.
When you run one fruit stand, you wake up at 8, you're at the broker at 8:15, 8:30, you're loaded up and you're on your way. You set up your stand and you want to be going by 10, you want to close it at 6. The best program is 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. because you need that extra hour in the morning to set your table up so you can get the production you want. And although you'll only pick up $50 between 9 and 10, it's going to be the difference of whether you net a grand or not. And the other thing is you're going to get a lot of traffic between 5 and 7, and you're going to think, man. So you want to be 9 to 7 is how long you want to work your stand. But I got to go extra early because I got more than one thing going, you know?
Okay, so yeah, I don't want to get too far off track. Okay, I asked you how am I going to make $1 million in 100 days. So the Craigslist, I'm going to get my employees. I've qualified them. I've trained them because they've watched me for 4 hours. I mean, they're going to make a couple mistakes at first, right?
Sure, and it's not going to hurt anything. They're going to overdo their baskets and your average is going to decrease. But every day, at the end of the day, when they unload their cash in your living room and you do your sorting with them with the money thing, and you calculate, you know, what their average and everything is before they leave. It only takes a few minutes.
Well, let me ask you this. If you want 4 stands, you've got 1 truck. How are you handling the move?
I need to have a trailer if you're going to make $1 million.
But you're the guy handling all the table signage and everything, or what's their responsibility after when 7 o'clock rolls along, your employees handling your stands?
It's different with different employees. Some where the girls, I have to almost every single one of them set them up and tear them down. While I'll always have at least 1 or 2 guys that I can use in several different ways, not just to run a stand, but sometimes I'll need somebody to do my job for me. I'll need somebody to run cash pickups. I'll need somebody to bring lunches out to the girls. So, you know, I'll need to do some managerial things where I'm not able to because I'm breaking in 2 new spots today. I want to train these 2 new people, but I need somebody to give spot 7 and spot 3 a half an hour pee break.
So you're running a crew.
That's my idea.
Can I ask you, like, what's the most stand you run somewhat comfortably at one time where you're just not totally freaking out?
Freaking out's when I get past 15. You're freaking out. But what you want to do is you want to keep yourself in the 7 to 10 range, and that's comfortable.
Can I do $1 million in 100 days with 7 to 10?
I have one spot that brings in over 2 grand cash a day net. I have another spot that's right there and many spots that are in the 15. I have a few in the 800-900 range. But when I say you're going to make 1,000 cash in your pocket every day, I'm not exaggerating.
And that's after you've paid your employee?
Right.
That's sweet. That's sweet cherries right there.
Every day has a dozen stories when you're at the fruit stand. They're interesting stories. They're fun stories. They're stories you can't wait to go home and tell your girlfriend about.
That's tell me some that you just remember over the years, some that stick out in your mind.
All right. This is one of my favorites, not because it's all that interesting or funny, but this one touches me. I give away fruit for about a week a year, where the ocean meets San Francisco. There's a beach there called Ocean Beach with several large parking lots. The first parking lot is clear up by the sea cliff, and that's where all the surfers park. And that's kind of like where we like to hang out, just because we're not there to make money during that week, although we sell a lot of cherries. But if you bring me a bag off of the beach full of garbage, you can come up here and trade it for any one of my baskets of fruit. And that's how we get the beach clean. We spend about a week a year giving away fruit at a beach. Because up here in San Francisco, there's no big raking crews and machinery and all that. There's garbage on the beach, and it gets really bad in the summertime. So every year we set up a tent there, and people come up and buy cherries. But a lot of our cool, like, hipster surfer dudes and stuff, they'll just come up, grab a plastic bag from me, take it out on the beach, fill it up with garbage, come back, and take a bag of fruit. And it's great for me. It's great for them. It doesn't cost me much. I know it's a couple $100 a day, whatever. But I'm making 10 times that already out there. And I'm just going to run my little fun program. This cleanup beach week is always about for me. And I'm making money. I got stands going, but I got people handling that because I'm only right here for that week. I just love that week. Anyway, let's talk about the story. Up pulls these two big yellow buses, and out pour like 70-something kids, like with their red camp shirts on, and they're all like waist high, little kids. And I see the big burly manager guy of them all, and I wave him over, and we start talking, and he brings them up. It's just so cool to see a line of 70 kids up to your tent, and they all take a plastic bag, they all go out onto the beach, and they all come back. It's really great, because Chandra's got a clean bag for them, while she takes their dirty garbage bag, ties it and tosses it next to the truck. The bag of garbage was higher than the truck when we were done. And she gives them an empty bag. They take a couple steps forward. I reach into the case with my glove on, pull out about a pound, and drop it in their bag. I say, thank you very much for helping us clean the beach. We really appreciate it. If you want to, you can save that bag and bring it back with more garbage, and I'll give you some more. So the 70 kids clean the beach. It was so beautiful. They made like a line. It's a real wide, wide beach. And they just swooped it and filled up all their bags and came up. It was great. Well, guess what happened about an hour later? About half of those kids came back with another bag of garbage.
You were out of fruit?
No. I got lots of fruit. I'm making money at the same time as we're giving it away. I'm not losing money. I shouldn't say that I'm actually ever going to lose money.
Yeah, you're selling too.
I'm selling too. And even if I give away twice as much as I sell, guess what? I made money. So the kids come back on a second round, about half of them, come back on a second round of garbage drop. And I tell them, you know, I'm sorry. I cannot give you any more cherries. Oh, no, I would love to give everyone any more cherries, but you don't understand. Your little kids, 2 pounds of cherries equals big tummy aches past that point. I can't give you any more cherries. But next time you guys come here and you see us here, I will be happy to do it again. And thank you so much. It's just so cool. You know, it felt so neat to have all these little kids passing underneath you, getting their handfuls. Anyway, I don't know, maybe hour and a half, 2 hours later, forgot all about the kids. I don't know, about a dozen of them come up with bags of garbage, and they set them next to the truck. And I said, guys, I don't want to give you any. No, we don't want any more cherries. And I just felt like the kids saw something from that, and I always take that with me.
But they wanted to just clean the beach.
Because they saw the value of their environment. It's something I carry with me every year. Little things like that. You wanted a story?
That's a great story.
It touches me when I think of them.
I hope you've enjoyed this interview with the Fruit Guy. For more information on the Fruit Guy's new upcoming book, Sweet Cherries, go back to the page and enter your name and email so you'll be notified when the release of his new book comes. Thanks for listening. For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com.